Lane called. Lucas, I got him coming out of the building, heading to the car. Good shots. I'm going to take it over to a one-hour place. Good, but have you talked to Marcy? We're a little hung up on Randy. Yeah, I talked to her, but having the pictures can't hurt. You say he's out of the place? He is, and he's moving in your direction. He's in a hurry. Lucas, Dell, Marshall, and Gibson were huddled in the middle office of Carver's place with two TV monitors, both hooked to the same camera, and each with its own tape deck, a couple of Bose speakers, two tape recorders, and four separate cell phones. Lucas picked up his phone and called Barstad next door. Ellen, he's coming. Now, if he gets uncomfortable, throw his ass out. If he won't go, yell for help. Are you okay?
I'm fine. Don't worry, Lucas.
I'm going to hang up now. They couldn't see her. She was in the bedroom, and there had been no place for a monitor. Even if there had been, Lucas was worried by the privacy problem. A camera pointing at the bed didn't seem right, though Barstad hadn't seemed bothered by the concept. They'd finally decided that the room was simply too small. The only camera was hidden behind the grill of a return air vent at the front door, from where it could sweep the room. Marshall disapproved.
I worry about this girl. She thinks she knows what she's getting into, but she doesn't. She ain't a hell of a lot more than a child.
She says he doesn't carry a gun, he doesn't carry a knife. If he goes to get a knife, she'll scream her head off, and we'll be there in 12 seconds. The 12 seconds wasn't a guess. They'd timed it.
That's a long goddamn time if somebody is cutting your throat, Marshall said.
Yeah, well, so I'm worried too. This is what we've got, and I think we're 97% okay. Dell had moved out to the front while Lucas and Marshall argued.
He's here.
Lucas was speed dialing Barstad. She picked up and he said,
He's here. You know how to call us.
I know. I'm ready.
He's out of the car, Dell said.
Here we go.
Oh, shit. Look at this, Gibson said.
He was staring at the monitor. They'd heard Barstad step away to the bedroom after she hung up the phone, and now, 5 seconds later, she was back. She wasn't wearing a stitch.
Jesus, Lucas said.
She glanced up at the camera as she got to the door, and Lucas thought she might have been smiling.
Fucking crazy, goddamn.
Barstad opened the door.
Come in quick, it's a little cool.
He fitted a hand around her hip and they kissed. As they broke apart, he said,
You look nice.
James, I really need something here.
So do I, he said.
He had the cord in his pocket, but for now, forgotten.
The bedroom's so dark.
She went to the wall where a futon unfolded over a couch rack.
Help me.
Together they pulled the futon off the rack and threw it on the floor, and she began tearing at his clothing. He was saying,
Wait, 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 and he started to laugh and finally collapsed on the futon. God help me, Gibson said. Look at this.
This could be a problem, Lucas said. This could be a problem. Christ, the defense attorneys will put this on and they'll impeach the shit out of her.
I don't know, Dell said. She's so upfront about it. Maybe she just tells them she likes...
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe she likes it, but on television?
Marshall backed out of the office.
This is over the edge.
As sex always does, it ended, with Barstad and Katar lying on the futon. Barstad said,
James, you were ready. What have you been doing? You were really excellent.
Katar smiled at her, but his ears tingled. There was a false note there, a kind of patronizing overtone.
Thank you. You can get me seriously turned on.
He stood up.
I'm going to run to the bathroom, back in a sec.
Katar walked back toward the camera.
Did you ever talk to that woman again, the lesbian thing?
Not yet. There's no point if you don't want to go along.
All right.
He was satisfied, clear on the lesbian front.
He could hear the rope in his pants pocket calling to him. You know, I can see why somebody like you might be interested, but I...
He sighed and stopped.
Tough day?
She asked. Oh, with Mom gone, I mean,
With the medical examiner and everybody looking at her, they're saying that the cause of death is undetermined, which I don't know. It means they might think it's not natural. James, when we left the medical examiner's the other day, we went shopping, and that kind of freaked me out. I mean, it seemed almost like you'd forgotten her somehow.
What?
Ellen, that's just what I do when I'm upset. You know I like to shop. And I was just very upset, and I...
She held up her hand. Okay, I'm sorry, I don't know. I've been reading about this gravedigger guy, and he seems so cruel. I thought you seemed a little cruel.
He heard the false note again. You're comparing me to this gravedigger person?
No, I just... Have you been thinking about my call?
His mind was clicking over now. She was interrogating him. Could somebody hear them? For Christ's sake, could somebody see them? I thought this afternoon, because of my mother, something gentle. Something that takes a long time. She seemed disappointed, and that was, in his mind, confirmation. Why don't we do something excessively oral? He slipped his finger between her legs. I haven't been in here yet.
He sort of walked away from that question, Dell said.
Doesn't look like she'll be asking any more for a while, said Gibson. When they finished with a second round, Barstead asked,
What do you think of the gravedigger?
Well, I guess I think what everybody thinks. He's a crazy man. He needs care. I think they just ought to take him out and dump him in a hole somewhere, cover it up and not tell anybody where he is. That would teach him.
That would, you're right. Katar stood up and gathered his clothes. Everything's getting wrinkled. Let me go hang them up.
The rack in the bedroom, she said lazily. Hurry back.
Katar was in a panic. She'd mentioned asphyxiation sex twice. She'd mentioned the gravedigger three times. She was interrogating him, he thought. But then, was it possible that it was all a symptom of her craziness, with her whole sexual experimentation regime? Was it possible that the gravedigger turned her on?
Then why the false notes? And now some of her smiles seemed false, and her sexual commentary too dramatic.
The biggest problem, he thought, was that he'd stupidly brought his rope. If there were police around, if they were watching him, they would hang him with it. He didn't know the details of DNA, but he had a general idea of how it worked. And the rope looked dense. It must have soaked up blood. There had been blood almost every time. And skin. And who knows what else. In the bedroom, he looked around quickly, but there seemed no place to hide anything. He hung his clothes on the rack, then took the rope out of his pants pocket, coiled it tightly, and stepped out of the bedroom and into the bathroom. She had a large rack of towels, washcloths, and other bathroom equipment on a stainless steel kitchen rack, pushed against one wall. He turned on the water, then slipped the rope under the bottom pile of towels. He washed himself, dried, and went back to the front room. She was waiting and asked,
What's next? You don't want to try the necktie thing?
Some other time. It really makes me nervous thinking about it. Again, the shadow of disappointment. But exactly how was she disappointed? Because a conspiracy was failing? Or because she wanted a loop around her neck?
James, you can be such a pill.
A little after 3 o'clock, Katar left.
I thought we were going to go wine shopping.
Ellen, you have absolutely destroyed me. I couldn't go wine shopping today without risking a stroke. Next time we'll go wine shopping before we start the sex. Honestly, you're a little bit over the top.
A pill, she said. You really can be.
Nothing here, Dell said as they watched him leave. We're back to Randy. Lucas brought in the intelligence cops to watch Katar. Since Katar didn't know he was being watched, only one man was assigned at a time. The babysitter took Katar through the night and then to work. A new guy picked him up at work. After Katar left Barstad's apartment, he'd driven home and buried himself in his bed, sick with apprehension.
but nothing had happened. Was it simply paranoia? He was worried about his rope. She was sure to come across it sooner or later. He had to get it back and hide it someplace where it would never be found. If the police were on him... If the police were on him, that was the question. He pushed himself up. If the police were there... He thought about it for a few minutes, then headed over to the Minneapolis Museum of Art. The museum was a reasonable destination for an art historian. As he drove, he watched his rearview mirror. He assumed that any police car would not be right on his tail, so he tried to look three or four cars back. By the time he got to the museum, he was watching a gray American car. His heart jumped. He was right. They were onto him. He visited the Impressionists and Post-Impressionists, forced himself to take some time. After a half hour, he could stand it no longer and headed for the exit. He still had some light. He maneuvered the car out of the parking space and headed home. He never saw the gray car. Had he been wrong? Where were they? By early evening, he was exhausted and bored at the same time. At midnight, he went to bed and slept, but poorly. But the next morning, on the way to work, he found them again. "There you are, moron. There you are," he said as the gray car nosed around a corner two blocks back. He went to work, taught a class, went to lunch, went to Martin's funeral home to talk about caskets. He did it all on remote control. Most of his mind was busy worrying about the rope. She'd find it. It was only a matter of time. And she'd know who put it there. And they'd find his prints all over the excellent rubber handle. He had to get it back. Lucas and Weather went to a new French restaurant called Grasses. At the door, Lucas discovered that the owner was named Grass and that they served beer, and felt better about it. "I was afraid we were going to have a choice between rye and Kentucky Blue." "Fucking French. Behave yourself. I know you like new restaurants." It was true, he decided, and he even liked French food. As they were talking, Qatar was leaving his house. The decision hadn't come easily. As far as he could tell, there'd been only one car with him during the day, probably just somebody to keep track of him. If that were the case, and if he were very, very careful, he might be able to walk away from them. He dressed carefully for the trip in gray and black, with a watch cap. He left the television on and put a lamp in the study on his vacation timer. He slipped out through the garage. The garage interior was pitch black. He pulled the door closed behind himself and groped toward the window. He slid the window slowly up and stepped over the sill into the side yard. He walked along the hedge all the way to the alley and back. He walked down the alley, the long way out, across the street at the end of the block, and into the next alley. He turned north toward a shopping area. He needed a phone and a taxi. The phone and taxi came easily enough, and Qatar marveled at his own courage as they went north through town to a strip mall above Cleveland Avenue. "There," he said, pointing. "The golf store."
"Want me to wait?"
"No, a friend will take me back." He made one fast run around the golf store to let the taxi get out of sight, then went back outside. He was a mile or two from Barstad's. He started walking. What would he do when he got there? He didn't know exactly. Love her up? Get the rope afterwards? Even get her to drive him back home? He smiled at the idea. That would take some balls. Have her drop him off on his doorstep. The cop outside would have a heart attack. He walked, thinking, what to do? She'd betrayed him, that was for sure. He flexed his hands. She betrayed him. And she had that neck. She pretended to love him, had used him, and then had gone to the police. What to do? Marcy and Marshall were waiting when Lucas got in the next morning. "You'd better get over to Regions," Marcy said. "The public defender called and he said Randy's calmed down. He wants to see you." "Did he say why?" "Randy said he wanted to deal with the boss."
Lucas shrugged. So let's get together a spread and take it over.
It's ready, Marcy said, holding up an envelope. There are pictures of the jewelry you got out of the place and of the dead girl, Suzanne. I've arranged for a court reporter. A guy from St. Paul Homicide will be there.
And I'm coming, Marshall said.
On the way to Regions, Lucas called Mark White, the intelligence cop babysitting Qatar.
Where is he?
In his office. Craig Bowden watched him into the building, and I picked it up from there. I haven't actually seen him yet, but he's due for a class in a half hour.
Stay close. We might be about to get an ID, and if we do, we take him.
Rob Lansing was waiting in the hall with a stocky black woman who carried a court reporting machine and a St. Paul homicide cop named Barnes. Lansing pushed through the door. Randy's head was up, and he had some color. But every minute of a hard 20-plus years was etched into his forehead and cheeks.
You guys really fucked me this time.
I feel pretty bad about it, Lucas said. You know I don't like you, and I know you don't like me. But I wouldn't have wished this on you.
Yeah, yeah. Is this deal straight? You guys taking care of the medical and cut all the rest of the charges?
That's the deal, Lucas said, nodding.
Let me see the picture.
I got 6 pictures. Want to see if you can pick one of them out as the guy who sold you the jewelry.
Lucas took the manila envelope out of his pocket and shook 2 groups of photos into his hand and pulled the paperclip off one group.
You have a name on the guy?
Marshall asked.
I mostly called him Dude, but I think his straight name is James.
James. Lucas looked at the court reporter, who was taking it all down.
One more brick, Marshall said. Randy took the first group of photos from Lucas, shuffled through them quickly, cocked his head at one.
This is a dude, James.
Lucas took it, showed it to Marshall, and then passed it to Lansing. To the court reporter, he said, make a note that Mr. Whitcomb indicated the photograph of James Qatar and that officers Davenport, Marshall, and Barnes and attorney Lansing are witnesses. Now I'm going to give Mr. Whitcomb another group of photos, and all of these are of James Qatar. This is to confirm his initial impression. Randy took the photos, again shuffled through them.
Yeah, that's the dude.
Did he kill Suzanne Brister?
Who?
Suzanne Brister was killed in your apartment. We have all the evidence, Randy. Her blood was all over the place.
Dude. Randy scrubbed his face with both hands. I can't remember. I was partying that night and I come home and she was dead. And I freaked out.
Did you do it?
No, man. That's what freaked me out. I didn't do it. I'd remember that. I walked up the stairs in the dark and I stepped on her. And I felt down. And there was this cold titty. And I almost jumped out the window. Then I turned on the light and there was this blood.
He shuddered.
Felt her up in the dark. I didn't know she was dead.
So when was James last over?
He scrubbed his face again.
I can't remember.
Lucas went back to the envelope of photographs, shook out the shots of the 2 rings found at Randy's, and handed them to him. We found these at your place, in your hideout. They came off a woman professor at St. Patrick's University. You remember where you got them? Randy looked at them and scratched his head.
You got them in my place? My stash?
Yeah.
Must have been when I was wrecked, because I don't remember.
What do you remember?
Well, that night I was partying. I partied all night. I ran out of money and I went home and I got some more money. And then I partied some more. And then I ran out of money again. I kept running out of money. And I kept going home getting some more. That's what I remember, going back and forth. And then feeling this cold titty.
Who are you partying with?
Dude named Lo Andrews.
I know him, said the St. Paul homicide cop. Got a place off Como. There's usually smoke coming out of the windows.
That's the dude, Randy said.
You don't know when Suzanne was killed or when you last saw James?
If James gave me those rings, he must have come over when I was wrecked.
They talked a while longer but got nothing significant. Back in the car, Lucas called Marcy and said, We've got a positive ID on Qatar. We're going to pick him up. Get started on a warrant for his house.
That's great. Dell wants to talk to you.
She handed the phone off to Dell, who said, Can I come with you?
Sure. He's down at St. Patrick's. Meet you there. Is Lane around?
Lane came on the line, and Lucas gave him Lo Andrew's address.
Find this guy. St. Paul Narcotics will give you a guy to walk around with, and ask him about that night. If anybody went home with Randy, if anybody saw anything.
Never thought I'd see it, Marshall said. God damn it.
Lucas looked at him, and Marshall seemed to be sweating.
You feel all right?
Well, not having a heart attack or anything, but my blood pressure is probably 900 over 900. I want to drag that son of a bitch out of that schoolroom. He's a goddamn teacher, Lucas. A teacher.
Teachers, they're about as messed up as anybody.
Marshall sat staring out the window, his lips moving, as though he were saying a silent prayer. But he'd heard Lucas, and suddenly smiled.
But Lucas, glancing sideways, could see what seemed like despair hanging in his eyes.
The arrest happened almost exactly as Qatar had seen it in his nightmares, give or take a snap-brimmed fedora. He was in his office and heard the voice and footsteps in the hall. He turned his head, sat up straight. A second later, the door opened, and a dark-haired, dark-complected man in a gorgeous charcoal suit opened the door and asked, James Qatar? Behind the man in the suit were two other men, and Burns Goodwin, the college president. Qatar stood up and tried to look puzzled.
Yes?
He sort of freaked, Lucas told Marcy. He denied it all, and then he started crying. I mean, really weeping, sobbing. I think it bummed Marshall out. He wanted resistance, and all he got was this mud puddle.
The phone rang, and she held up a finger, picked it up, listened, and said, Just a moment, I'll see if he's in.
She pushed the hold button and asked, It's that Culver guy. He says he really needs to talk to you.
Lucas Davenport. Chief Davenport, listen. Did you take Ellen somewhere? I mean, do you know where she is?
No. She was at her place the last time I saw her. What's going on?
I haven't seen her. Usually she comes over for a cup of coffee, or I go over to her place. But it's all locked up. Now a bunch of women are milling around outside. They were supposed to have a quilting class, and they say whenever she's had to cancel a class, she's called them. She doesn't answer her phone. I can't see inside very well because of the one-way stuff, but I can see a little, and it looks like some stuff has been tipped over or thrown around.
Stay right there, I'm on my way. He dropped the phone and headed for the door.
What? What? Marcy yelled after him. Where are you going?
Call the dispatcher and tell him I want a squad right now. He was running down the hallway when he saw Marshall carrying a carton of yogurt and a cup of coffee.
Terry, come on, Terry.
He kept running, and Marshall ran carefully after him, calling, What happened? What happened?
A squad was cutting across the street toward the front entrance, the driver waving at Lucas.
Lucas caught the front door, and Marshall piled in the back.
Lucas said, Go that way, across the Hennepin Bridge, lights and siren.
The driver nodded, and they took off.
Nobody can find Ellen Barstad. The Culver guy from next door says it looks like the place is a little torn up inside.
No. No.
Marshall was shocked.
Not that girl. We've been following him. He couldn't have.
Maybe it's nothing.
This feels really bad. This feels bad.
She's from outstate somewhere. Maybe she got freaked and went home.
No, I don't think so. This has got that bad feeling about it.
Lucas nodded.
Yeah, it does.
They were halfway there when Dell called.
What the hell's going on?
Lucas told him in three sentences, and Dell said, I'll see you there. They pulled into the parking lot in front of Culver's shop. Lucas hopped out. Culver was standing on the sidewalk talking to two elderly women. Marshall was already pressing his face to the silvered glass on the door.
He's right. It looks like some stuff has turned over.
Lucas pressed his face to the door. One of the quilt frames had been knocked onto the floor.
God damn it. Have you got something we can break the glass with?
Here.
Marshall reached under his jacket and produced a .357 Magnum. He stood close to the glass and punched it with the butt of the gun.
Marshall carefully reached through the hole and flipped the inside lock. Lucas led the way in.
Step easy.
He pointed at the track of blood.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Marshall turned to the door where Culver was now standing and said,
Stay out of here. Keep everybody out.
They walked carefully through the blood spots.
Looks like an impact spray, Lucas muttered at the door to the living quarters.
He put one finger high in the door and pushed it open. Ellen Barstad was lying by the sink. She was fully clothed, and she was dead. No strangulation, this. Her head lay in a puddle of congealed blood. The back of her head appeared to be torn off. Lucas glanced at Marshall. Marshall's eyes were closed, and he had one hand pressed against the middle of his face, heel of his hand under his chin, the fingers pressed against his forehead.
Terry?
Yeah. Yeah. God damn it, Lucas. I think we did this to her.
Lucas swallowed once, trying to get rid of the sour taste in his throat. Shook his head. Looked down the length of the kitchen and saw a hammer.
Weapon, he said. Let's get out of here before we fuck something up. Get the lab guys going.
Dell arrived 5 minutes later and saw them outside.
She's gone, Lucas said.
Dell stepped toward the door and Lucas said, Watch the blood in the work area. Dell disappeared inside, came back a minute later.
When did he do it?
Looks like last night, Lucas said. The blood puddles had started to dry out.
Christ. He looks like he freaked out, Dell said.
Looks like he chased her from the front door. Maybe picked up that hammer off the frame.
Lucas interrupted.
Sure it was hers?
Yeah, I saw it sitting there the other day.
Hope the motherfucker pushed that door open with his hand, Lucas said.
That's the way you do it. Run right in there and push it back with your hand.
Problem is, he's been here, Marshall said. We got movies of it. If he hit the door with his hand, he could say he did it some other time.
God damn it to hell! Why didn't we get her out of the way? Why didn't we get her out?
Why'd he do it? This isn't anything like he did the others.
It's like he did Newman.
If he did Newman, that could be hard to prove by itself, Dell said.
Hey, who the fuck's side are you on? Lucas asked.
I'm on your fucking side, but I'm thinking about the trial. We got Randy the coke freak, and we got these unconnected killings at St. Pat's that are all close to him, but none of them are in the style of the gravediggers. And what's worse is we had a guy watching him when he had to be over here killing her, Dell said, jabbing a finger at Lucas. What's going to happen when they get that into court? With a second man theory. If you take Randy out of the equation, we ain't got squat. You think Qatar's lawyer won't make a big deal out of that?
Oh, Jesus.
That is what the lawyers will say, Marshall said.
We can't lose this guy. There's no way.
We won't. Gonna hang the motherfucker. They all stayed, all the way through the crime scene work. When it seemed as if nothing new would be found at Barstad's, Lucas asked Dell, You got a car, right?
Yeah.
Let's go on over to Qatar's house.
I'll tell you one thing. He may be cleaned up after himself pretty good over here, but he had blood on him when he left, Marshall said. There's gotta be something.
On the way to Qatar's, Marshall seemed to shrink in the back.
You all right?
Lucas asked. Marshall started talking, rambling.
My old lady died the second year we were married. She was pregnant at the time. Hit a bridge one day, and there was some snow on the road. Just a little bit. She was racing my sister to see which one was going to have a kid first. They both got pregnant at the same time, and it was neck and neck. Except my old lady never got to the finish line.
Never remarried? Dell asked.
Never had the heart for it. I still talk to June every night before I go to bed. When Laura was growing up, she was just like a daughter to me. When she got taken off, there wasn't a goddamn thing I could do about it. Big cop in town, knew everything about everything. Couldn't find my own goddamn daughter.
He went on for a while, and Lucas felt Dell glance at him, just as he looked at Dell. Unspoken thought here, as they listened to Marshall ramble. Whoa.
Guitar's house was neat and beautifully decorated. A crime scene specialist named Greg Webster was running the crew who were looking at the house, and when he saw Lucas, Marshall, and Dell on the walk leading to the porch, he stepped outside and said,
I heard.
You got anything useful?
Not much. We did find a set of women's earrings in his chest of drawers. They looked pretty good. Have you talked to Sandy McMillan? I heard she got something up at his office.
What?
I don't know. One of the guys just said she was pretty excited. Some computer shit. Is Sandy still up at his office?
I don't know.
When Lucas finally found her, she was in Lucas's office, talking with Marcy.
Greg Webster said you found something in his office computer.
No, we didn't find anything. That's what was so interesting. He put a new hard drive in his machine the day that the story broke on finding Aronson. He pulled some files off an old hard drive and reinstalled them on the new one. The old drive could have been full, I suppose.
Bullshit. He was getting rid of evidence. Bet he had Photoshop or one of the other photo programs on it, and some of those drawings.
Sounds like he's a half step ahead of us.
Keep digging around. That date will be useful, though.
He told Dell and Marshall about it, and Marshall said,
Another brick in the wall.
No wall so far, Lucas said. Just a lot of bricks. Craig Bowden showed up. Bowden looked scared. He was the intelligence cop assigned to watch Guitar overnight.
I even took notes, he said. Lights on and off, all that. Television on and off.
Could he have gotten out the back?
Yeah, sure. Not with his car, of course, but if he'd wanted to sneak, he could have. There was just one of me, and he wasn't supposed to know we were interested in him.
What about this morning? Was he carrying anything when he left?
I couldn't see when he loaded the car because it was in the garage. When he got out at St. Pat's, he had a briefcase and a sack.
A sack?
Like a grocery bag.
Clothes, Marshall said. You didn't see him do anything with the sack?
No, he went inside and that's the last I saw him. Mark White took over from me.
They called White. He had never seen Qatar with a sack. They called Sandy McMillan again, the crime scene cop who'd been working at Qatar's office.
I didn't see any sack.
Sack's still got to be in the building, Lucas said.
Who wants to look for a sack? They all rode to St. Pat's together, but hope was dwindling. They'd been run around too much, with too little to show for it. One of these days when nothing was going to work right. They found a janitor, an elderly man with a drinker's nose, who told them that all the trash cans in the building had been emptied. He didn't remember any brown sacks, and certainly no sacks full of clothes.
I could have missed it, though. I put them all out in the dumpster, and I'd be happy to go out and rip them apart if you want.
They all followed him out to the dumpster. He got a stepladder, climbed the side, jumped in, and began throwing sacks out. There were 15 of them, one from each of the built-in trash receptacles in the building. The janitor got a new box of bags, and as they broke open each new bag, they shifted the contents to a new one and tossed it back in the dumpster.
Shit, Dell said when they finished.
What the hell would he do with them? Lucas asked.
Tell you what I would have done, the janitor said. I would have taken them down to the furnace room. It's a gas furnace, but it's got big gas bars, and you could cremate a hog in there.
Show us, Lucas said.
He did, and as they looked at the flames roaring away, Marshall said, God almighty.
Would James Qatar know about this place? Lucas asked the janitor.
The little fart grew up here. He was in and out of every corner of this college since he was a baby. Nothing here that he doesn't know. Got all these little hidey holes. Probably knows the place better than me.
Okay, let's get this fire turned off. We'll send somebody around to look underneath it, see if there are any remains of zippers or buttons or whatever.
What an asshole, the janitor said.
You didn't like him?
I didn't like him from way back. Sneaky little fart. Always sneaking around. Scared the piss out of me more than once. You'd never see him coming.
You know he's been arrested?
Yeah, I think he probably did it.
On the way out of the building, Marshall said,
We can't lose him now. We just can't.
Lucas said, Hey. Marshall looked at him for a couple of seconds.
I think I'll go home. Say hello to my sister. Check in with the office. Fix the garage door opener.
We'll get him, Del said.
Sure,
Marshall said. He glanced at Lucas, then quickly away.
See you tomorrow, maybe.
Let it go, Lucas said. We're doing what we can. Weather found him sitting in front of the television, watching the PBS National News, a beer in his hand.
That kind of a day? She asked.
Much worse, he told her. She took off her coat and said, Start from the beginning. He started, and when he finished, he said, So we might have gotten Ellen Barstadt killed, and it's possible that the guy's going to walk. I think we got enough, and we didn't feel like we could leave him out there any longer, not after Newman and his mother were killed. He's freaking out. He's killing everybody. He's on some kind of psychotic run. Weather was shocked about Barstadt. She had almost nothing to say except, You'll get him.
Yeah, but you need a smoking gun. We've been so close in so many ways, Lucas said. If we could find just one picture, one piece of clothing with blood on it, anything.
Lucas got in late the next morning, found Marshall already at the office.
I thought you might take a day or two off.
Can't stay away, but my ass is kicked.
Lane wants you to call him at home, Marcy said to Lucas. He said call any time.
Lucas called and Lane answered, his voice thick with sleep.
I just got to bed. I wound up chasing that Low Andrews guy all over the metro. I finally caught up with him about the time the sun was coming up.
He have anything?
Yeah. He was carrying a little coke and we took him down to Ramsey County Jail. He's on hold until we get a statement. The bust is probably bad though.
Yeah, yeah. What happened?
He says he was with Randy the night Suzanne Brister was killed, and that Randy ran out of money, and so they took him to an ATM and he maxed out his card. Then he ran out of that, so they went back to Randy's place and they got a compact sound system and sold that on the street. And they ran out of that, so they dropped him at his place. But an hour later, he was back with $400 that he said he took off some white dude.
Yeah? You think it was Qatar?
I used our warrant and went over to the bank and we looked at Qatar's ATM use. He took $400 out of an ATM on Grand Avenue about 8 blocks from Randy's at 12:38 p.m. same night.
God damn it, Lane. What can I tell you? I'm good.
You are good. You gonna nail this down?
I'd like to get a little sleep first, but we're gonna get with Low Andrews' attorney at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Probably drop the charges on the drug bust and get the statement.
When Lucas got off the line, Marshall, who'd taken up residence at Lane's desk, said,
Another brick?
A decent one.
Lucas explained, and Marshall said,
That's good. But I'm worried about a trial.
Always worried about a trial, but we're piling stuff up.
Need a smoking gun, like your girlfriend says. With everything else, if we had the gun, I'd be satisfied.
Qatar's preliminary hearing had been set for the following Monday. Lab tech searched the debris tray on the furnace at St. Pat's, found various bits and pieces of metal, but nothing that could be specifically identified as coming from clothing. Lane identified 3 cab trips from the general area of Qatar's house to the general area of Barstad's, but none of the drivers could identify Qatar as a passenger. Low Andrews made his statement, but as an assistant county attorney pointed out, it was a statement by another heavy doper. 30 cops were recruited to look inside every trash can and behind every fence within a half mile of Barstad's. They found all kind of clothing and shoes, but none of it the kind that Qatar might have worn. It was all old and obviously abandoned, or was identified by the people who owned the trash cans.
What if Qatar didn't do it?
Swanson asked.
He did, Lucas said.
I think we're in trouble, Marshall said.
Marshall had begun to brood. He stayed in town over the weekend. He got permission to enter Qatar's house under the warrant and spent most of the time taking the house apart.
He called Lucas late Sunday afternoon.
You know what I got?
Something good?
I got a face full of glass splinters from the insulation, and I'm covered with soot. There ain't nothing in the house.
My fiancée is about to make some meatloaf with gravy and Bisquick biscuits. Why don't you drag your sorry ass over here? We'll throw your clothes in the washer and give you something to eat.
I'll do that.
Marshall liked the food, and Weather liked Marshall.
You know, what we really wanted for Laura was not revenge, he told her. All we wanted was justice. I don't think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get a lot of bureaucracy and treatment programs, and Qatar's probably going to sue everybody in sight and get them all running around like chickens. And nobody's going to want to hear about Laura. Nobody misses her but me and her family. She hadn't done anything. If we could just get a little justice for her.
He was just like all the good old guys back home, Weather told Lucas after Marshall left. Weather had grown up in a small town in northern Wisconsin. They wanted to keep everything simple and right. I really like that, even if it's a fairy tale.
Problem is, it is a fairy tale. At least mostly.
Marshall was back for the preliminary hearing, dressed in a brown corduroy suit and fancy brown cowboy boots, his hair slicked down. The hearing was routine. Qatar in a dark suit and tie, his face drawn and white, his eyes ringed as though he'd been weeping, until Randy Whitcomb was rolled in. Randy, strapped into a wheelchair, looked out at the chamber under a lowered brow, scanning the rows of press people and gawkers. Finally found Lucas and fixed his gaze. Marcy, sitting next to Lucas, whispered,
Is he looking at you?
Yeah, and he looks pissed. Richard Kirk, head of the criminal division in the county attorney's office, took Whitcomb through the preliminaries. Yes, Randy said, he'd bought the pearls from a man who said he was from St. Pat's. Yes, he'd bought the diamond rings from the same man. He'd sold the pearls on the street, he said. He didn't know who had them now. Do you see the man who sold you the jewelry here in the courtroom? Kirk asked. Randy looked around for a full minute, scanning up and down each row.
No, I don't see him.
Kirk took a step back. Look at this man here at the defense table. Glass, Qatar's defense attorney, surprised as anyone, struggled to his feet. But before he could object to Kirk's direction, Randy leaned toward the microphone and said,
I never seen him before in my life.
A moan swept the courtroom. Marshall said, What happened? And Marcy said, The little jerk. Lucas didn't say anything because he could feel Randy staring at him and knew he wasn't finished.
How do you like that, asshole?
Randy bellowed into the microphone.
He pointed at Lucas and yelled, You cocksucker, how you like them apples?
The judge was beating on his desk, but Randy kept shouting, and finally the judge told the bailiff to wheel him out. Randy went, screaming all the way, and Lucas stood up. We gotta find out what happened. We gotta get the little son of a bitch. Where's Lansing? Lansing was in the hallway. As soon as Lucas and Marcy stepped outside, Randy, who had subsided, began screaming again.
You keep that motherfucker away from me! You keep that motherfucker away!
Lansing came over and said, You heard him. Lucas reached forward and pinched a piece of Lansing's coat lapel between his thumb and forefinger.
It's not up to me to give you advice, but I will because you're so young and dumb. You better find out what happened, or you could be looking at the end of your legal career. You cut this deal and we've got the case hanging on it. We're all in shit city now, you not the least of us.
Lansing swallowed and stepped back.
I know. I'll find out what happened.
Marshall came out.
Well, shit. That really put the dog amongst the cheeseburgers.
What's happening in there? Lucas asked.
They're talking about bail. They're going to give it to him.
Somebody called Randy last night and talked to him, Lansing said. He was on the phone from his office in St. Paul. Lucas and Marcy had just gotten back from a meeting with the county attorney, where Kirk and Towson began laying the lines of a deal offer for Qatar. Randy's not the most coherent guy, but the basic story is, whoever talked to him told him that the word on the street is that you turned him, that you own him, that you're running him, and that you're going around town bragging about it. It's supposed to be all over town.
That's bullshit, Lucas said.
Who have you talked to?
Outside of this office, nobody. My social life is my fiancé. I've been nowhere. I've talked to no one. How about other people? I'll ask around, but it smells like bullshit.
Randy doesn't think so.
Get Randy on the line with some of his pals. Have him ask. You can tell the little cocksucker two things for me. First, I never talk to anybody. And second, he can kiss his ass goodbye. He's on the train to Stillwater, and when he gets out, he'll be 10 years older than I am now.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. I'm not going to wait a minute. I'm going to take a couple of days off, and if Randy decides he wants to change his mind, he'll have to change it with somebody else. I'm finished with him. He can rot in fucking Stillwater.
Marcy, who'd been listening, said,
Wow, really?
Really. If anything urgent happens, call me on my cell phone.
Marshall took off?
Yeah. His head must have been about to blow up.
You want to put a team on Qatar just to make sure?
Lucas shook his head. He's got to wear an ankle bracelet. He doesn't have any access to money, and his lawyers already told him we're whipped. Why would he run? What would he run with?
Lucas spent the evening thinking about the phone call from Lansing and about the phone call to Randy. He and Weather ate in, went to bed at midnight, and just before she went to sleep, Weather asked, Are you really going to stay home all day?
Nah, probably not. Maybe go for a run in the Porsche, knock around a little.
I'll try to get home early. Why don't we go out to the marina and take a look at my boat?
Okay.
He never heard Weather leave, and when he opened his eyes, it was 11 in the morning. He ate breakfast, went out, got in the car, jumped on his favorite blacktop road to River Falls, and let the Porsche engine out of the box. For the next hour, he looped along the back roads. He thought about Qatar, about the bloody clothing from Barstad's, and at 3 o'clock, pulled the lightly breathing Porsche into the parking lot at St. Patrick's, walked across the lawns to Qatar's office building, and found the janitor with the whiskey nose.
If you're going to hide something in this building, where you could get at it quick, and whenever you wanted, safely, and without anybody seeing, but you didn't want to hide it in your own office.
You mean like if Jim Qatar hid some evidence?
Yeah. Where would you hide it?
If I was Jim Qatar, let me show you. You know about the skeleton cases upstairs?
No.
Next floor up from Qatar's office, just up the stairway. Let's take the elevator.
On the way up, the janitor said,
You think maybe he didn't burn the clothes?
I don't know. Seems a little risky.
They got out at the top floor. The hallway outside the elevator was lined with glass cases, each holding reconstructed skeletons or stuffed birds or animals. 30 or 40 of them, Lucas thought, lining both sides of the narrow hall. The ceiling hung low overhead, a checkerboard of darker and lighter wood panels.
This originally was book storage and supplies, but when that moved out, they put these cases up here for the art students. They're supposed to draw from them.
So, Qatar,
I'll show you.
There were hard-backed wooden chairs between cases.
They sit on these and drag them around.
He pulled a chair out, stood on it, and pushed one of the wooden ceiling panels. It lifted easily.
There used to be a higher ceiling, way high to the top of the building, but dirt filtered down all the time, and there wasn't any way to clean it, so they put this drop ceiling in. Years and years ago, maybe in the 60s. Anyway, all the kids know about it. There's a ledge right inside, and sometimes, if they're working, they'll just push one of these things up and leave their stuff in here.
All right.
Lucas looked down the hall. There were probably 100 panels per side. He could spend the rest of the afternoon looking, and probably not finding anything. On the other hand...
You want to look? Glad to give you a hand.
No, you go on, Lucas said. I might push up a few of them.
When he was gone, Lucas dragged a chair out and began pushing up panels in the silence of the long hallway. He found he could place the chair beneath one panel, lift it and the panels on both sides, and so cover three with one move of the chair. He went left down the hall from the elevator, spent 20 minutes, found nothing but an old lunch, very old, maybe a decade. Instead of working back down the other side of the hall, he carried his chair back to the elevator and started the other way. On the second panel,
he saw a plastic sack stuffed on the ledge. But Qatar had been carrying a grocery sack. He had driving gloves in his pockets. He pulled them on, then tugged at the plastic bag, heavy and hard. He lifted it down carefully and peeled back the garbage bag. A laptop. He stepped down carefully, sat on the chair, and opened the laptop's cover, found the switch, and turned it on. A green light came up instantly. Still charged. A student? Windows came up, and then the icons on the left side of the screen. Halfway down, he spotted the eye in the square of Photoshop.
Son of a bitch.
He brought Photoshop up, found a file listed as B1, opened it. A photograph of a woman, but skeletonized, reduced to a skein of fine lines. He maneuvered it awkwardly around the screen, unfamiliar with the Photoshop protocols, but finally got a face.
Barstad.
There you are, he said. He maneuvered the pointing stick, brought up another one, found an A1, A2, and A3. Opened A1, found the face. Closed his eyes for a moment, then said, "Gotcha." Aronson stared back at him. There had to be prints on the bag or the laptop. Nobody could be that careful, that paranoid, and the surfaces were perfect for prints. But now what to do? He sat thinking for another 5 minutes, vacillating, then stood on the chair and put the package back on the ledge. Hesitated, then put the panel back in place. Went down in the basement and found the whiskey-nosed janitor. "It's taking longer than I thought, and I can't see well enough all the way back," he lied. "I'm going to bring in a crime scene crew tomorrow. Don't let anybody go up there, okay? You don't have to guard it, but don't let anybody mess around up there."
"I'll keep everybody out."
He spent that evening thinking about the phone call to Randy and about the laptop. Did the laptop assemble the bricks into a wall? Or was it just another half-assed brick? Even if they could demonstrate that Qatar did the drawings, and therefore knew Aronson before she died, what if Qatar argued that he met her through the second man, Randy, or vice versa, that Aronson had met Randy through him? After all, only one of the dead women was associated with the drawing, and there were more than a dozen women still alive who'd gotten them. Weather said to him, "You've been in Never Never Land again. What's going on?" "Working on a little puzzle. Want to talk?" "No, not right now." He looked at her. "Maybe tomorrow." Lucas lay awake after she slept. The phone call, when it came, would probably be a little after 3 o'clock, he thought. The pit of the night. 3 o'clock passed and he dozed. The problem may have resolved itself, he thought as he went under. He really wasn't prepared when the phone rang at 5 o'clock. He was awake instantly, rolling off the bed. Weather waking and saying, "What? What?" Lucas picked up the phone. "Yeah?" "Chief, this is Mary McCulloch over at the center. You asked to be called. We've sent a car over to Qatar's place. He's running." "Okay, when did he walk?" "About 15 minutes ago." Thanks for calling." "What's happening?" Weather asked. "Qatar's gone." "Are you going?" "No, nothing for me to do." "Lucas, what's going on?" He sat on the bed. "Jesus, I don't know. I might have screwed up, but there's no way to know. That's what's been worrying me." "Tell me." He thought about it for a minute, then said, "It was that call to Randy. You gotta ask yourself, who knew the direct line number into his room? After they moved him out of ICU, they put him in this little room by himself where he'd be away from everybody else, and you could see the door from the nursing station. The switchboard was told not to switch any calls without an okay from Lansing. I asked the nurses. He didn't have any visitors. And then you've got to ask why somebody would do that. Make that call, even if he could." Weather was puzzled. "Well, why?" "Because he wanted Qatar turned loose, or at least let out on bail.
if he was in jail, and if he cut a deal on a plea, second degree with psychological evaluation, whatever, he'd be out of reach. Weather thought about it for a half second, then her hand went to her mouth. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Yeah, I think Terry Marshall probably picked him up. It's about 60-40 that Katar's dead already. Lucas, why did you... Because I wasn't sure. And even if I thought so, I'm not sure it's not the right thing. What if Katar gets out in 10 or 12 years and starts killing again? That could happen. Yes, but Lucas, this isn't right. This is awful. But Katar... Lucas, this is not about that asshole. This is about Terry. If he's done this, it's going to be terrible for him. The heck with Katar, it's Terry. He looked at her and said, it's only about 60-40 that Katar's dead. If he's not, it's about 60-40 that I know where they're going. Weather said, the graveyard. That would fit with the way Terry's mind works, I think. Lucas, you've got to call somebody. Lucas, you can't let this happen. Lucas put his hands to his head, sitting on the bed, frozen, then suddenly looking up. All right, I'm going. I can't beat them down there. The alarm went off 15 minutes ago. Maybe I can work something. Maybe I can, if there's time. Maybe. He was out of bed, pulling on his pants, boots. Give me my sweatshirt. Give me my sweatshirt. They stumbled all the way through the house, Lucas pulling on clothes, out to the garage. He climbed in the Porsche as the garage door rolled up, and she shouted, go, go! Lucas fumbled his flasher up on the dash and plugged it in, all the time running the numbers. Marshall wouldn't be driving more than a mile or two over the speed limit to avoid any possible traffic cops. Marshall wouldn't want to take any chances. And that gave Lucas a chance. Giving Marshall a 20 or 25 minute head start, Marshall was starting further into town than Lucas was, and was facing more traffic. He and Lucas should arrive at the graveyard at about the same time. What would happen there, Lucas didn't know. Maybe he should call the Goodhue County Sheriff, get them to send a car. But then if Marshall wasn't there, they'd know that Lucas knew who had taken Katar. He touched his jacket pocket for the phone, still thinking about it. And the pocket was empty. The phone was back on the charger on his desk. One option gone. He touched his belt. The 45 was there. He'd taken it without thinking. But what for? Three people would know about all of this. He and Weather and Marshall. And Dell would probably figure it out if he ever sat down to think about it. There would never be any proof. Marshall would be too careful for that. What to do if he got there too late, with Katar already dead? Just keep going? He hadn't told Weather or anyone else about the laptop. If he'd taken the laptop downtown after he found it, had processed it, they could have rearrested Katar on the Aronson charge, and he probably wouldn't have made bail. Marshall's whole concept would have been short-circuited. But then what happens to justice? 10 or 15 years in jail, with Katar coming out all clear, even more careful to kill again? Some of them, some of the Katars, never stopped. Lucas was still uncertain of the equities. If it weren't for Weather, he might have let it go. He saw the DNR parking area coming, and sitting in it, God damn it, Marshall's red Jeep Cherokee. Lucas screamed into the lot, brake beside the Cherokee, and hopped out, looked around. Marshall and Katar were up on the hillside. They had stopped walking, and both were looking down at him. Katar was dressed in pajamas, and his feet were bare. He had been gagged for a while. Several winds of duct tape were looped around his neck, as though they'd been pulled down from his face. He was shivering, either from fear or simply from the cold. Marshall was wearing jeans and a tan barn coat. He had one hand on Katar's jacket, and in his other, the big frame 357. Katar shouted down, "Help me, please! He's crazy! He's gonna kill me!" His hands had been cuffed, and he held them out toward Lucas as though he were praying. "Terry, goddammit! Don't do this, man!" "I was about half afraid you'd show up here. I didn't think you'd be this quick. 10 minutes later, and we'd have all been fine." "Terry, we got him. I found his laptop computer. It was in the ceiling in the museum. It's got pictures of the women on it. It's got to have prints. We got him for everything, man." "Little too late for that. This is better anyway.
takes care of a couple of problems. His and mine.
Shoot him! Guitar screamed at Lucas. Shoot him!
Marshall jerked him another step across the hill.
Terry, goddammit, stop it! Stop it!
Lucas was walking up the hill toward them.
You gonna shoot me and save this asshole?
No, but you gotta listen. We can still smooth this out. You turn him in, we'll tell everybody you freaked. You talk to a shrink for a couple of weeks? He was 50 feet away. Marshall had gotten Qatar to the dug-over area where the graves were.
Oh, horseshit, Lucas. You know better than that. They'd hang me by my nuts. They'd make an example out of me. Cops can't do this shit.
40 feet. Qatar's eyes were wide.
Don't let him! You can't just shoot me!
He shouted at Marshall.
I can't die today, I can't! I have classes today, I have responsibilities. The college is expecting me.
I don't think so, pal.
30 feet. Lucas could see that Qatar's bare feet were bleeding. Marshall lifted his pistol so that it pointed directly into the back of Qatar's head.
Stop right there, he said to Lucas.
Terry, please, man. You're a good guy. What if we've screwed this up somehow?
There's a tape recorder on the front seat of the car. When I got him in the car, I pulled the duct tape off his mouth and told him what I was gonna do. But I told him that maybe I wouldn't if he'd tell me about the women. You listen to that tape. You'll get all the names, and pretty close to the dates, and the places he picked them up. He even says there are two more down in Missouri, some godforsaken place down there.
You promise me, Guitar said.
I lied.
I'll go to trial, I'll confess. You got me, all right? All right. Just stop this now. You win, okay?
On the other hand, I could always shoot you too, Marshall said to Lucas.
But he was showing a grin again.
How'd they ever prove it was me?
Lucas shrugged. They would. There's probably a parade on the way here now.
Yeah, I know. I guess.
The smile, if it was ever there, faded away.
Well, I guess there ain't gonna be any big ceremony in this.
Qatar looked at Lucas, his voice level but desperate.
Help me.
Terry,
you want to say a couple of words? This is your last chance. I'm going to be in hell in 10 seconds,
Marshall said to Qatar. Qatar turned his head away, trembling violently, and then he stopped. Maybe the finality of the situation had finally gotten to him. Maybe he was embarrassed by his pleading. Maybe this was simply the real Qatar. Lucas didn't know. But he reached down, carefully brushed some mud off his pajamas as well as he could with his cuffed hands, then looked Marshall in the eyes.
Your niece, she was a tasty little cunt. She took a long time to die.
You cocksucker!
Marshall screamed, and Lucas shouted, Terry, goddammit! The pistol shot was an ear-splitting bang, and Lucas flinched away from it. Guitar's face had a bloody hole in it where the hollow point had exited. His legs went out, and he pitched down onto one of the refilled graves. He twitched twice, and he was dead. He didn't look like Edward Fox anymore. Not even a bald one.
Terry. Jesus Christ, Terry.
Lucas was 20 feet away. Marshall was talking, but talking to Qatar.
Didn't think you had the guts for that. You got to me, you did that.
He shook his head, looking down the slope at Qatar's crumbled body, but now talking to Lucas.
I had a little time to think on the way down here. Time to think. I spent 10 years of my life looking for the miserable shit. Ruined my life, what was left of it, after June was killed. Took Laura.
I just wish Laura would have had a chance in life, you know. Where's Jesus when you need him?
He put the pistol under his own chin and turned his head to look Lucas in the eyes.
But you know what, Lucas?
He took a last look around and a deep breath.
Today's a nice day for this.
You might want to look away for a second.
Terry?
Dell arrived 20 minutes later,
pounding into the parking lot in his wife's Dodge. He jammed the transmission into park and jumped out of the car. Lucas was sitting cross-legged on the hood of the Porsche.
Weather called. I got here as soon as I could. Thought maybe I should call somebody, but I didn't. Not yet.
Lucas didn't respond, and Dell looked up at the hill. The bodies were out of sight, untouched, except for a handful of dried oak leaves that Lucas had dropped over Marshall's half-open eyes.
Too late?
Lucas sighed, rubbed his forehead with his fingers, eyes closed. Just in time to say goodbye. Lucas and Weather were working on her boat, an aging S2. The sky was a perfect blue, and the sun felt like it wanted to burn down on the back of his neck, but didn't yet have the horsepower.
This thing is made of fiberglass. You wouldn't think you'd have to sit around and sandpaper and varnish,
Lucas grumbled. Shut up and paint, Weather said. Aren't you supposed to have, like, croissants and wine when you're working on a sailboat, and some friends come by?
The more you talk, the sloppier you get. Just paint and shut up and let me scrub.
She was down below, scrubbing. Lucas was sitting in the cockpit, working on the slip-out hatchboard. He secretly believed it was make-work to keep him out of the way while she did the real cleanup.
Glad we're not out there racing, he said. Those guys gotta be freezing their asses off.
Best time of year. She stepped into the companionway, stepped up, and looked toward the racers.
That's Lou Smith, way out on the end.
Look at him. He must think something's coming.
Lucas leaned back and closed his eyes. It all smelled good. The day, the lake, the marina, even the varnish. If everything were like this all the time, well, he'd go nuts. But it was nice to be like this every once in a while.
He opened his eyes and looked at Weather. She was still talking, but it was all about racing, and he really couldn't care about any of it. What he did care about was Weather, and he smiled, watching her enthusiasm. Sailing. For two frantic days after Qatar and Marshall died on the hillside, Lucas had shuttled between grand juries in Goodhue and Hennepin counties. The papers and television stations were wild for the story, and that might yet go on for a while. They all wanted to know why Lucas had gone down to the graveyard. Lucas could only say that it had been a hunch that came to him when he got the call from the 911 center. Why didn't he call Goodhue? Because he had no real knowledge that Marshall was involved and didn't want to damage a friend if he was wrong, and had been so disturbed by the possibility that he launched himself onto the road without his cell phone, and once on the way, it seemed best to continue, blah, 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 blah. Cops and lawyers came and went, but as long as Lucas's story stayed simple, there were no seams to cut into. On the day after the shooting, Lucas sent a crime scene crew to St. Patrick's to talk to the janitor, with instructions to search the overhead on the skeleton floor, and anything else the janitor suggested. The crew found the computer an hour into the search, and the laptop had Qatar's prints all over it. The computer forensic people did their work, and up popped drawings of Aronson and another woman from the graveyard. At the same time, an illegal copy of the tape recording that Marshall made of Qatar found its way to Channel 3, and then to every TV and radio station that wanted it. Lucas didn't know who leaked it. He suspected Dell, but Dell professed to be mystified, as did Marcy, Sloan, and Rosemarie. Qatar's babbling confession and his naming of names led to quick IDs on the unidentified bodies from the graveyard and to a new search in the countryside a few miles east of Columbia, Missouri. The usual Minnesotans were shocked by the police misconduct that led to Qatar's killing, but Rosemarie had a quiet word with old friends in the Democratic Party's political feminist hierarchy. With that, and with the constant playing of the tape recording across 9/10 of the electromagnetic spectrum, the controversy withered. That cleaned up the case. Dell had wondered, privately, just how early Lucas had suspected Marshall. Lucas shook his head and walked away from the question. Avoided the lie, but Dell knew him well enough to understand the walk. Rosemarie also had a few questions that she didn't ask. She did take Lucas aside and said,
"The governor was impressed. I gave him 10 minutes on what a great crime detection bunch we have over here. And you know what he said?"
"What'd he say?"
He said, I don't care about how good they detected. What I liked was the way they handled it. So, that's good. That's very good.
Tidying up the loose ends on the case hadn't tidied up his head. A vague melancholia settled over him, a mood that Weather picked up. She began arranging events and talked to Marcy behind his back. Marcy began arranging events and suggested that Lucas and Weather and she and Kid go out to dinner. Lucas said, sometime, and kept wandering around town. He could have stopped the whole train, he thought. He never made up his mind. He'd never gotten clear on what he should do. He could have made a decision, but he hadn't. A private failing, and a serious one, he thought. That night, after the sailboat, after a salad of roasted chicken breasts and walnuts and lettuce, after a bowl of wild rice soup, after a beer or two, he was puttering in his study, the whole case still tingling at the back of his brain. After a while, he sighed and walked down to the bathroom. The door was shut and locked. Weather?
Yes, just a minute.
That's okay, I can run down.
No, just a minute.
He could hear her moving.
What are you doing? Okay, I'll run down. No, I'm just peeing on a stick.
What?
Peeing on a stick.
Weather, what?
I'm peeing on a stick. Okay.
This is Eric Conger. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Chosen Prey by John Sanford. This program was produced and directed by Rick Spencer, with sound design by Steve Petrofessa and abridgment by Virginia Noonan. Chosen Prey is a production of Putnam Berkeley Audio, copyright 2001, all rights reserved. The book, Chosen Prey, is available wherever G.P. Putnam Sons books are sold.